Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm John Pierce, your host, along with Neil Heaver, our Director of Operations, who's doing air engineering for us this evening here on WDIY. And I'm very pleased to have as our guest, a returning guest to us, Dr. Shannon Boyle Schuster, who is head of school of the Swain School. You probably have heard of Swain School. And if you haven't visited it, do yourself a favor and go and see what a beautiful campus it is. 24th Street in Allentown. Shannon, the exact address, do you remember it?
1100 South 24th Street.
All right. Let it be known she did that without notes. So Dr. Shannon Schuster became head of school of Swain in July of 2016. So it's been just a bit over a year.
It has.
You have your feet on the ground now. And you grew up only blocks from Swain. So you're an Allentonian from the beginning.
I am. I'm a native.
All right.
That's true.
But you went to public school, whereas Swain is a private school. Right? Where did you go to schools in Allentown?
I went through the Allentown system. I went to Union Terrace and then Robb Middle School and Allen High School.
All right. Yes. And you you now lead the Swain School as head of school. Swain is an independent co-ed day school located on 20 acres. Is that right?
It is. We have a beautiful campus, and most people don't realize it. When you drive by, you kind of see only the front and the front of one of the pieces of the property. So people are always shocked when we give them a tour, and they say, I didn't realize it was this big. And then, you know, behind the school, we have several playing fields and lots of playgrounds and open space for kids. So it's always a shock to people who haven't been on campus. So I appreciate you inviting people. We really love people to come and see what we do.
It's just a gorgeous place.
Yeah.
Is the school itself a single building?
It is and it isn't. We've had four major construction pieces over the 70 years that we've been in this location. So the first building was built in 1950, and then additions were made over the last, like I said, 50 or 60 years. So you can walk through all of it without going outside, but you can definitely walk through and see that you're in different phases of the building.
It was put up piecemeal.
Yeah. Well, I think it kept growing.
It
started small.
Yes, right.
So.
In fact, let's do a little bit of history of Swain right now, because you said it started small. Well, it started back in 1929 when D. Esther Swain arrived in Allentown. Her husband, James Swain, was in the history department at Muhlenberg College. So women in the neighborhood learned that Mrs. Swain had been a teacher, and they persuaded her to open a kindergarten. So this is the very beginning of what would become the Swain School eventually. The mothers gathered books and supplies, located a spare upstairs bedroom in the neighborhood that they could rent for classroom space. Wow.
Yeah, there's some urban myth and some truth to some of it in that, there's no school furniture, and there was this image that they were sitting on wooden crates, and it was just very organic in that, I don't think they paid her. I think she had these four boys and four girls and did her best. And there was an outbreak that winter, so it shut down early. They didn't finish the year.
It was whooping cough.
It was. So
we don't hear about whooping cough anymore.
It's pretty uncommon. There's a lot of vaccines that protect it. But so it started really naturally, and I don't think she ever had any intention of it continuing. And then, one thing leads to another. And at one point, they did move locations a couple different times. They rented the Masonic Temple. They were then in another house. And when they outgrew the Masonic Temple, she was really ready to just close it all down and said, it's over.
Oh, I did not know that they were at the Masonic Temple.
They were on the West End, right by West Park.
Right.
And actually, they used the park as the recess area. Oh, and they were outside
perfect.
A ton in West
yes.
Park. But as it outgrew that location, and I think they couldn't rent all the space anymore, something came up with space, so she was really ready to shut it down. And a woman who was on the board drove her out 24th Street, which then was filled with alfalfa fields, and said, what do you think about this? What if I gave you all this land for you to keep the school running? And so next thing they went from almost closing to really building a formal school and making it much more official than I think it had been run before that.
Wow. Now, my notes say that there was a Miss Marjorie Allison.
Correct.
Who was a friend of Mrs. Swain's. And she had the alfalfa field.
Yes, yes.
Did she donate that to the school?
That's my understanding, is that it was donated. Yeah. And one of our buildings is called Allison Hall, which actually was the original gymnasium, was called Allison Hall. It's now been converted to other things, but the structure's still there and the sign that says Allison Hall. So very much appreciative of that moment when it could have gone either way for the school.
Yes, wow. Well, that does happen with institutions. You reach low points and you ask yourselves, can we afford to continue? And does this make any sense anymore? And wow, it hit that very low point and then bounced back. And how it's going today. How many students do you have today?
This year we have 322 students, ages 3 to 8th grade. So we start with preschool, 3-year-olds, and then we finish in 8th grade. And our graduates really go all over the place after Swain, anywhere from public school to boarding school to other independent day schools. It really depends on the child. A lot of go to charter schools. So they really start with us. And, you know, for those that stay the whole time, 11 years is a very long period of a child's maturation, probably the most important time.
Right.
So we really love that we can be such a huge part of a child's formative years and such an important part of who they become. And even though they go on to many, many great high schools all over the country, I think many of them feel that there's always a really special connection when you've spent that much time, especially in a small school. You know, they really are comfortable and they know everyone, and it's really their home. And actually, when Mrs. Swain built the building, that was her goal, was that she wanted it to look like a house so that when the children arrived, they felt comfortable and safe.
Do you have buses busing the children?
We do, in the sense that Pennsylvania provides busing to private schools, so we're able to make use of that.
Okay. Is that a law that you must have buses?
It's not. We don't have the buses. It's the public schools have to provide busing to us if the child lives within a certain range of geography.
Farther than a certain.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think we serve about 22 school districts that come to Swain. Not all of them are bused, but many, many of them are bused.
All right. You have a progressive curriculum with academic rigor, all right? Of course you do. Now, what is a progressive curriculum versus another kind
great,
of curriculum?
That's a great question. Progressive is a tricky word because I think anyone who doesn't know what it means can sometimes fill in the blank. So I think the best way to say is it's not conservative. It's not a conservative traditional curriculum. It still looks like a school, and kids still have reading class and math class, so it's not so progressive that you wouldn't recognize it. But I think it's progressive in that because of our size and because of our philosophy, we really believe in hands-on learning. So when you come into the school, kids don't sit for very long. They're often active in what they're doing, whether it's math or science or something else. We definitely try to use research to dictate what we do, right? That's how we make our decisions. So we've done a lot of research, for example, on outdoor play. So all of our students get 2 recesses a day, right? And even when it's cold, they go out. You know, we really feel that there's value in that. And again, research backs that up. So it's progressive, but in a way that is still recognizable within the school context.
So even if it's 20 or 25 degrees outdoors, they bundle up and go out?
So we have a certain cutoff. The real feel has to be 20.
Right.
And as long as the real feel is above that, then they bundle up and go outside. And many of them keep their snow boots, you know, an extra pair at school. And we have bins of mittens and scarves that we keep by the doors in case someone forgot what they need.
And many of those left over in that bin at the end of the school year?
Both ways, yes. They take a lot, and then we end up with mismatched ones as well. but yeah, it's important. And there's just a lot of research that says that kids will learn better when they come back in if they've had that time.
Interesting, yes.
And so it's, you know, we're about the learning, and so we have to do what's going to best capitalize on that. There's another piece that we've started implementing this year about quiet time. So now all of our students, kind of after lunch, that time of the day, have about 15 minutes of absolute silence. And they can do different things. They can color, or, you know, they can sit silently, they could read. But that the act of being silent is actually really beneficial to children. It's kind of this mindfulness, meditation philosophy, but yes. There's new research around that. So we're experimenting with that this year. But again, we find that they are much more engaged in class at 2:30 if they've had 15 minutes of silence. And that's really the tough time of day, especially when you teach young students.
So you're talking about roughly 2:30 in the afternoon.
Well, the silence is more at like 1 o'clock. But what we're finding is they're better at 2:30 when they've had the silence at 1 o'clock. And on days that, you know, for some reason they haven't had it, or in the past when we didn't do it, they weren't as engaged or alert. Or just actively learning at 2:30.
So does that mean it's a time right after lunch?
It's just about, it depends on when you have lunch. But yeah, sometime right after lunch and after recess. Yeah. So they've gotten the wiggles out and they've gotten food and they can really be silent and be in that space and just take a moment to.
And that's for how long?
About 15 minutes.
Right. I heard once upon a time there was, I didn't hear, I knew about it. One of the elementary schools in Allentown where they had a period of 15 minutes in which everyone in the school was to read something. The secretaries, the principal, the teachers, the children, everybody.
Wow.
Now, you have not instituted that.
We haven't, but I love that idea. Maybe next week I'll try that out.
an idea. And one of the things about that is that it gives the children the sense that they're in the real world where they're doing things that adults are doing. And showing that it's important. If it's important for adults, then maybe it's important for the children also.
I think in all ways the modeling for parents or teachers or any adult, right? Part of our responsibility in raising the next generation is modeling what we expect them to do. And, you know, that old adage of, you know, do what I say, not what I do is just doesn't work. Or it might work to a point, but it doesn't really work in the end. And so we really, I would say we adhere to that as well, whether it's we eat lunch with the kids as well. And if you came in to our lunchroom, you'd see teachers sitting at a bunch of the tables. But that matters, right? That they see, well, this is how an adult eats and this is how an adult talks during lunch.
Do you spread this teachers out among the children's tables, or do the teachers have their
table? They spread themselves out. I mean, we don't require it, but they just naturally do it because, again, it's kind of the philosophy of the school is that to work at Swain, you have to want to be actively involved in all the pieces of the kids' lives. You're not just a math teacher or just a third grade teacher. You are a part of the community. And in that role, you're going to do everything from eat lunch with them. We make them all do all the recess duties because we feel like what happens in the recess period can be very important to understand the child, right? So if you have someone else doing recess duty and the child comes back in the room and they don't seem themselves and they don't want to learn or they're getting frustrated, but maybe you don't know what happened. And maybe at recess they got in an argument, or maybe at recess they fell and they're just not recovering as quickly. So we really value that. Many of our teachers coach our athletic teams. They sponsor the clubs. And that's really kind of an independent school model. I would say that's not unusual in independent schools, that there's this idea that you're not just doing your job. You are doing all the jobs, that we're all a part of that. So whether it's cleaning up the, you know, cleaning the cafeteria, sometimes our teachers are helping with that, or it's doing the duties. But that modeling is important, that we're all in a community. We're all this. We're all equal,
right,
and respected.
Now you serve lunches to the students. You have them prepared in a kitchen there at the
school.
We do.
We have actually an outside service that comes in with chefs and nutritionists, and it's very exciting and the food's delicious. Some students still pack, which is normal,
and
some picky eaters when they're younger, but for the most part the students love the lunch.
Well, I'm just curious, what percentage would you say of students pack their lunch versus buying lunch?
I'd say about 25% pack their lunch, and then again that's typically the younger students. Again, when you think of a 3 or 4 year old, they tend to be pickier than a 12 year old.
Yes.
So we find as they get older, the lunch line gets longer, I guess. Okay. I'd say, and the other lunches.
What's happening nowadays at the school as far as policy about cell phones? Every child now has to have a cell phone. I bet you have.
Well, they think they do.
3 and 4 year olds who think they have to have a phone.
Yeah. So we certainly can't control, right, whether or not their families choose to buy them a cell phone. And I certainly have two children, and one of my children has a cell phone, so I definitely understand that need. We don't allow them out during the day. So if you bring it to school, it has to stay in your locker. It has to be turned off. And if you need to contact someone during the day, we have phones. And we have ways that you can contact your parents. You don't need to use your cell phone. And we don't have a lot of problems with it. I'd say the other thing, though, we do have a lot of technology. We're a one-to-one iPad school, so all of our students have access to iPads in the ratio, right, of one-to-one. So it's not just about phones, it's about technology. And how do you make sure that your community remains healthy when technology can be really distracting? So we have rules like no technology at lunch, right? So even though you have a school iPad or you own your own iPad and you use it during the school day, you can't have it at lunch.
You know, and you cannot have your cell phone because you don't see that phone until you're ready to go home.
Right. So cell phones are definitely locked away. But the iPads, like I said, a little different because in the older grades, they do need it in class. A lot of their textbooks are online or, you know, they're writing a paper that they have to use technology for. But you have to really be conscious of what you want your community to be like. And so, you know, when you're walking down the hall, you can't be on technology. When you have recess, you're not allowed. You can't say I'm going to stay inside and play games.
You could potentially have 100 students at recess, each one looking at the handheld device, right?
It's funny. I think some of them would think that way, but they really love recess. You know, I think a few students might think, oh, I could maybe avoid socializing or avoid something, but when it's time for recess, they run. I mean, even the 12 and 13-year-olds cannot wait to get outside. And because we have so much land, there's so many choices, right? Again, we have playgrounds and we have two full-size soccer fields in the back. And some kids play soccer and some kids play lacrosse and some kids just talk.
Oh.
But there's so much, I think, available that they really love it.
I think of recess as just running around, which is what I did when I was a child. But some of them like an organized sport.
Oh, absolutely.
They get teams and they go at that for... What, a half hour?
It's about 20, 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Far too short as far as the students are concerned.
That's right.
It's like summertime. Where did the time go?
That's right.
And here we're back in school. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY. I'm John Pierce. My guest this evening is Dr. Shannon Schuster, who is the head of school at Swain School. We've been talking a little bit about the history of the school, which has deep roots now in Allentown, goes back to 1929. The present location, Shannon, is as of what year?
1951.
51. So even there, we're talking long term.
Mm-hmm.
The older we get, the more we realize that's more than 60 years ago.
Right.
So it's a very vibrant, independent school. It's a co-ed day school located on 24th Street in Allentown. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will talk more about this wonderful private school in Allentown called Swain School. Stay with us. This is WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond, and we will be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, this is Melissa Block. During this fun drive, I could talk about the cost of keeping reporters in hotspots across the country and around the globe until your eyes glaze over. But to put it simply, when you support NPR News on WDIY, your contribution helps pay to send reporters and producers to Syria, China, South Africa, and to pay for many other things that make NPR News and WDIY everything you've come to expect. So please make your contribution and be proud that you've helped make NPR News on WDIY possible. Please give as generously as you can. Call 610-758-8810 or give online at WDIY.org. That's WDIY.org. And thank you.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 here on WDIY.
Swain School in Allentown. That's our subject this evening. And Dr. Shannon Schuster is here telling us about what's going on over there at Swain. She's the head of school and has been in that position for a little over a year. I wanted to ask you, Shannon, between the time that you grew up just blocks away from Swain School and the time that you became head of school, what did you do in the meantime? You probably left the Lehigh Valley,
things.
Did you?
I did. So after I graduated from high school, I went to undergraduate in Tennessee at Vanderbilt University. So I spent 4 years there and then jumped around a little bit in the East Coast, just in teaching positions. I was a middle school math teacher and a high school math teacher. So Maryland and then back in Pennsylvania and then back in Tennessee. And then I took a year off of teaching to get my master's in administration. So I got to live in New York City for a year. That was great. And from there, I went back to Washington, D.C. and spent 12 years there, and then 3 years in Philadelphia, and now back here.
And what did you do in Washington?
I worked in an independent school, a large independent school. Started off as a teacher and then became an assistant principal and then became the dean of faculty. And you know how over time things just grow, and the better you are at your job, the more they give you, which is what happened. And it was a lot of fun.
And did Swain School find you when you were in Washington?
Not quite. I'd moved to Philadelphia first, and I was teaching at being the assistant head at a school in Philadelphia area. And the position for Swain came open. And ironically, my family and I had just purchased a new house. So
in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia.
Oh.
And so I called my husband and said, "You won't believe it. I think the Swain job is open." And he hung up on me. And then it turned out there was a year lapse. They actually had an interim head for 1 year while they did a full search, which is not uncommon in independent schools to spend a whole year getting ready for a new head. So after that, I decided I would throw my hat in just in case they wanted me. And luckily, it worked out. And it's really been, I always say it's really been my dream come true. And not just because I love Allentown, but because Swain is the exact kind of school I wanted to run. And so when that, you know, position became posted, I just said, well, this is exactly the kind of school I would want to be in charge of.
You just didn't want to commute from Philadelphia.
That was a long commute because head of school requires a lot of hours and a lot of nights, you know, and I have children, so I wanted to be able to see them. And, you know, I love Allentown, so it wasn't a hard sell to move back.
We could put a bow on this picture by saying you moved back into the house where you grew
up. Oh, you had to bring that up. I would have loved nothing more. I loved the house I grew up in, and actually it had just been sold pretty recently when we moved back, but that may have been too close for comfort. No, we ended up in a great house anyway. So.
And what kind of work does your husband do?
He had been in politics, which is what led us to Washington, D.C. Area. But believe it or not, he's a wine specialist. So he tells people what kind of wine to buy.
All right. Interesting occupation. The Swain School started off very modestly. They had 4 boys and 4 girls in their first class. They had to suspend for a year because of a whooping cough epidemic, but then opened the next September with 19 students. So they grew a whole lot in that one first and second years that they were. Went to the Masonic Temple across from West Park, and the next 15 years the school grew steadily, adding grades as the youngsters aged. Mrs. Swain, who was the founder, created the curriculum, ran the business end of things, and even cooked the children's lunch each day on a hot plate. Now, I'm guessing that is exactly your job description.
I love to cook, but I do not cook the school lunch, so that would probably not be good for anyone. No, so the job has changed, and I think the job of independent school heads have changed a little bit over the years as well. I mean, the reason the title headmaster used to be called is that you were the master teacher. You were the headmaster teacher. I do teach. I'm teaching one section of 6th grade pre-algebra this year.
Oh.
So I do still teach. But we spend a lot of our time really acting more as a CEO. I do have 2 principals that also work at the school, so they really run a little bit more of the day-to-day student piece of the school. And my job is a little more 30,000-foot view, whether it's finances or fundraising or facilities, and just all the different things that come into
radio interviews.
Exactly. This is the highlight, of course.
This is great to have you back and hear your enthusiasm for so-called molding the minds of the young.
Right.
I don't know if mold is the right verb for that, but anyway, helping them to make their way through this wonderful world of learning. To me, it's always been the most important years, and this is probably a cliche by now, of the little ones who are learning to read and starting to do numbers. Those are the really important years. If you can get them going in kindergarten, first grade. Maybe we're saying preschool now these days, are we?
A little bit. I mean, I think that certainly the preschool years are really important. And there's, again, more research coming out even just in the last few weeks about the importance of preschool. But there's a really fine balance, at least at Swain, that we believe, which is preschool is not meant to be kindergarten. So preschool is still very different, but it has different objectives. And so a lot of preschool is around social emotional learning, fine motor skill development, gross motor skill development, those kind of things, which you need to be able to be successful in kindergarten. And that's why they're connecting the success of kids who have a great preschool experience to those later grades, but it's not meant to advance them academically. It's meant to give them these foundational skills.
That sounds exactly like what kindergarten was for us when we were young.
That's true. Right? That's true.
Getting used to playing well with others and
getting
along. And
there's a lot you learn through play that I think people underestimate, right? So even if kids are playing in dirt, dirt's different on a day when it's dry versus a day when it rained the day before. And you don't really, as an adult, take in all those pieces about how play is teaching different things.
Yes.
And so we have a play-based preschool program. So it looks like a lot of play, but it's very consciously decided play. So we don't just say, do whatever you want the whole day, right? But there's different pieces of play that they have to engage in, whether it's outdoor play or whether it's dress-up play. And there's a lot that goes that a child learns by dressing up as a different person, whether it's they change their voice or whether it's right how they might behave. So things that adults think is just total free play is actually very consciously decided and really very scheduled in a way that you may not realize if you just walked in.
Well, I think that over the past 50 years or so that I could speak to, we've become better at making learning seem more like fun and not just sitting at a desk and trying to concentrate on either the written word or the blackboard or and so on. So I think we're doing a better job with that. There's even a professor of in a seminary who told me, if it's not fun, why do it?
Right.
So that could be a slogan for teachers today.
Yeah, and I think not just fun, but engaging, right? Because I think sometimes we confuse fun with less meaning, but you can be really deeply engaged in a difficult conversation. That's not necessarily fun, but it's engaging. And that's what I think we really strive for at Swain, is that how do we keep kids engaged? And some of it's knowing them really well. So even in the class that I teach, we have a rotating schedule. So twice a week I see them at 8:30 and twice a week I see them at 10:30 and once a week I see them at 12:30. And they're different at different times of the day. And that's actually why we do it. Because again, research shows that if you only have math at 8:30 in the morning and you're not a morning person, guess what happens to the math class, right? So we rotate those times in the older grades. And I had them right after lunch yesterday and they were really quiet. And I know why. You know, they were still processing their food. And so I changed what I did. And I said, everybody get up and we're going to move around. And so that ability to figure out how to keep them engaged based on where they are, instead of just this is the lesson plan we have and this is what we're going to do. But how do I keep them engaged both intellectually and physically and emotionally? Because again, if you're not ready to learn, it doesn't really matter what the lesson plan is. And again, we have really, you know, our class size is about 12 or 14 students. So we really have the ability to know the children really, really well and know what they can handle and know what else is going on in their life in a way that we can keep them engaged. And again, there's research that shows that when you're engaged, the learning is deeper and you retain it longer and you can apply it better. So we work really hard to do that.
Yeah, that's terrific. What is the ethnic makeup of the children?
Great question. We're very, very diverse. And I tell people all the time, having grown up here, I certainly feel fairly familiar with what the Lehigh Valley looks like. And when I came to interview at Swain, I was really pleasantly surprised that we are more diverse in many ways than even the demographics of the Valley. So we're about 33% students of color, which is a generalized term. But I think people would make the assumption that a private school and you have tuition and that it would only attract certain types of families. And we find that actually it's the reverse. We attract all sorts of different family structures. We have a lot of different religions. We have a lot of different racial and ethnic backgrounds. And again, it's great to have that because we know kids learn better when they have kids who are different than they are. because they'll say, well, what is that? Or tell me more about that. So everything from being with your peers to then what that brings to the community. So Rosh Hashanah was last week, and we have a number of Jewish families, and we had the Jewish parents come in and present about Rosh Hashanah, and certainly the Jewish students know what Rosh Hashanah is, but some of the other students may not. Exactly. And then we had apples and honey at lunch the next day to make sure that we could, you know, have them experience it a little bit as well. So it's very, very diverse, especially considering the overall demographic of the Lehigh Valley, and I think it's a blessing to the school.
Yeah, so right now, as I understand it, the ethnic makeup of public schools in Allentown is more than 50% Hispanic.
Correct.
And so how the Lehigh Valley is changing and has changed since you were a child, since any of us was a child, is rather
sure.
Astounding. You mentioned tuition. So how much does it cost to send a child to Swain School?
So the tuition is high. Compared certainly to public school, which is free, and also compared to Catholic school, which is, you know, the closest thing to us really in that it's private. It's not public. So our tuition ranges from about $18,000 to $23,000, depending on the grade. But I often have to explain to people that not unlike the college system, we also offer a lot of financial aid. And that's really based on what families can pay. And we do that because we value socioeconomic diversity just as much as we value racial, ethnic, and religious diversity. So we have a lot of students who receive financial aid, and they pay a variety of fees based on how much their right. family can afford. And that's right. determined by a third
that's
party.
That's great. Do you have anybody full-time working on the financial aid part of this?
Not the aid part, but certainly admissions. So we have a full-time enrollment management director who not only, you know, talks to potential families and gives the tours and gets to know them. We also have to assess all of our students to make sure that they're a good match for our school, because we can't serve all types of students. You know, we're a small school and there's certain things that we do well, and we want to make sure that students are getting what they need. And then she helps families with that financial aid portion. So she kind of walks them through the right. steps and how to fill out the forms. And we rarely have a family that comes back and says they can't make it work. We work really hard to make sure that if they want to come and if they're a good fit, that we can make the financial piece work.
Does that person who is in charge of admissions and financial aid go out to other places to bring in students?
Yes and no. I mean, probably not as much as you might think, but she certainly right now is visiting preschools, because that's, many of our students come in those younger grades. So just visiting the preschools and making sure we're making connections there. Or it's local events. You know, sometimes we'll have representatives that people can come and ask us questions. So because we serve students for 11 years of their life, you know, hopefully they come in and they stay. So the openings are generally at the lower grades. We often do have, one or two openings in other grades, or often a family will come and they'll say, we have a 3-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 10-year-old. And we try to make that work. So we certainly are out and about, I think, trying to be a member of the community. And I think that's what's important to me, is that even though we're a private school and even though, you know, we do charge tuition, we want to make sure that people look at us as an asset to the Lehigh Valley, not just someone that serves a small percentage of students.
Nice.
So that's important to us.
That goes right along with our attitude here at WDIY, being a good citizen, being a good cooperative member of the Lehigh Valley.
Right.
So it's perfect. My guest this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse is Dr. Shannon Schuster, who is head of school at Swain School. And we've been talking much about the makeup of the student body there. You have 300 students. Is that your optimum number, do you figure?
So we have 322 this year, and I think at 350 we'd be as full as we can be from a facility standpoint. So I wouldn't want to go much bigger than that. But ironically, even if we had different facilities, I do think there's a tipping point and when a community changes by size. And I certainly thought it was an asset coming in, but 13 months later on the job, I would say it's probably the absolute thing I am the most excited about is the size, in that every kid is known by all the adults, right? So even if you're an 8th grade teacher, they tend to know who the 3-year-olds are and vice versa. But the kids also know each other. And the older students say hi to the younger students in the hall. And when you think of a 3 or 4 or 5-year-old, they're very young.
Yes.
And the ability for them to walk around the building and feel so at ease and so safe, I don't think you get that in a bigger place, just from a facility standpoint, right? There's more hallways or more stairwells, and we don't have that. We have a smaller facility because we have a smaller student population, and we see these 3- and 4-year-olds walk with full confidence around the building, but also at the same time with 13- and 14-year-olds, and that's important for those older students to model that for them. I think it holds all of us accountable, because you look at a 3- or 4- or 5-year-old, and I think we're all sometimes on our best behavior when we're near young children. Yeah. But again, it is really an incredible community, because everyone feels safe and supported, and you can see it. And we graduate kids who feel so good about themselves because of that environment, that I think they're launched into high school and beyond, and they carry that. And we hear that all the time from our high schools. And, you know, again, we send our students to all over the country. But we constantly hear, you know, the Swain students always run for student government, or the Swain students are always the first to get up to speak. And I think that's because for 11 years, they felt incredibly safe and incredibly nurtured and confident. And you just don't erase that kind of formation in your life when you go to a new thing. So even though we send some of our students to the big public high schools with 3,000 or 4,000 kids, they still run for student government in 9th grade.
Interesting.
And where the other students tend to be still trying to navigate, they just carry themselves in a really poised, confident way that, again, I'm enormously proud of.
That has to be a combination not only of the numbers of students you have, but of your staff also.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
How they work with the children. So how many teachers are teaching right now at Swain?
We have about 45 full-time teachers, and then we have a couple part-time teachers, not many, and then we have about 15 people who are staff and administration. But I always tell everyone at school, we're all teachers. You know, even if you're the bookkeeper of Swain, you're a teacher, because when you walk down the hall, you know, if you don't pick up the trash, that sends a message to kids. And if you do pick up a trash, that sends a message to kids. So we all have a responsibility in a school to think of ourselves as a teacher, because we're around the children.
Right. It's such a such an interesting challenge to run a school like this. How does the size of Swain compare to schools where you were before? You were a teacher at different mm-hmm. schools.
Well, my last two schools were both independent schools as well, but they were both larger. So the school in Philadelphia was around 800, and my school in D.C. was around 1,100. So significantly bigger. Both those schools also had more than one campus, in part to try to keep things feeling small, even though the numbers were larger. And those were great schools. Every school I've worked at, I've loved. But again, I think I was attracted to Swain for some of these exact reasons, and it's held true. So I think you can do a great job. I think, again, a lot of it's class size, not just school size. It's about the commitment to make a relationship and know the child. And again, that varies from school to school, but I think that's part of our job.
Absolutely. So Swain School in Allentown goes way back to 1929. Ooh, that was the year of the big crash on Wall Street, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ooh. And they probably began in September of that year.
Yes, absolutely.
And October was the crash. Well,
right.
They should have closed right away. By my
well, like I said, I think it was free. I don't think that anyone was paying for it back then, so okay. It was probably easy to keep open.
But those are deep roots in Allentown, the Swain School. Dr. Shannon Schuster has been talking about the present day at Swain, what's going on. I want to get into another subject when we come back from our break, which is upon us now, and that is the future. And the Imaginate Center, is that the way pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
And Makerspace. What in the world are those? And we will be back from our break in just 60 seconds.
Hello, this is Renee Montaigne. If WDIY relied on commercials for most of its money, we could try to bring you the same amount of news and all the local programs, Your Financial Choices, The Blend, WDIY Classics, but this probably would not happen. The business model for public radio is listener support. Listener support means that this is radio about you, for you, and by you. NPR and WDIY rely on listeners to make this station possible. We're relying on you to make a contribution right now, not tomorrow, right now. So please call 610-758-8810 or give online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thank you.
Dr. Shannon Schuster has brought a number of initiatives to Swain School, including a parenting education series that premiered last year. Shannon, tell us a little bit about this series.
Sure. Well, I think parenting is not only challenging, but continues to get a little bit more challenging.
Yes.
with technology and all the other things that are happening in the world. And at Swain, we really value parent partnerships. And I always kind of use the phrase that we're raising these children together, right? That the school and the parents are really partners in raising the children. And as a parent, I know that there are so many things I don't think I'm good at or not good enough at, or I don't know enough about, whether it's sleep or nutrition, you know, especially when they're younger, you're kind of focused on those things. And then as they get older, it's technology and just all these things. And so we said, why don't we start this series that would not only help our parents, you know, hopefully be better parents, but we'll benefit as a faculty and really open it up to the community, again, to be a good member of the community, because we want all the kids in Lehigh Valley, you know, to get what they need and to have a great childhood. So it's not just about the 322 students at Swain. It's how do we help each other? How do we support each other as a community? And so last year we did three very different topics. This year we picked three, again, very varied topics, and we could have picked, there were 10 others on the table, because again, there's so many questions, I think, as parents that we say, what about this? How do we do this well?
It's a wonderful idea to have a parenting education series. I wonder if you'd just tell us, what are the upcoming dates? And is the public at large invited?
It's absolutely open to everyone in the public. It's free. We do like people to register, so we have enough chairs put out. But if you don't get to register and you show up that night, we will welcome you. So the first event is coming up. It's October 18th. They're all on Wednesday nights, just so that we can remember them. And they're all at 7 o'clock. So the first one's in October 18th. And the first one is a former colleague of mine who is an expert in really human sexuality and sex education. And I've been joking that rarely do you meet a parent that says, oh, no, I have that down. That part's easy,
exactly.
Right? What parent,
exactly,
you know, doesn't need a little advice on that?
That's right.
And the thing I love about Al, and he has a great book out called For Goodness Sex, but the thing I love about Al is that it's really not about the birds and the bees. It's about how do you have a healthy relationship? How do you communicate in a relationship? How do you have healthy body image? And again, those are really big topics, I think, in today's world. So thinking about the whole child, right? Not just the 14-year-old or the kid going through puberty, but how do you set up a young child to have healthy body image? How do you set up a young child to model healthy relationships so that as they get older and they might encounter some of these tougher things, they have the foundation to make good decisions?
And his name is Al?
Al Vernacchio.
And he will be there Wednesday, October 18th, 7 p.m. at Swain School. If somebody would like to register, how does that person do it?
Sure. They can go to our website, and it's on the front page, pretty easy to find. And
just
there'll be a button, and you can kind of click on it.
Swain School.
Swain.org.
Swain.org.
And we'll take you to it. And again, it's pretty easy to find. You can always call the school, too, if you have a question. But again, we really welcome people to show up. We really want the more people there, the better, because we want to help everyone. And we want to have a great night. We want people to leave and feel good. And that was certainly the case last year with the event. So we're just hoping it grows and people can depend on us.
In case somebody has a doubt, it's S-W-A-I-N.
Correct.
So swain.org. Is there a telephone number that people could call?
Sure. 610-433-4542.
All right. And after October, November, December, and January are over, you have another one
coming
along.
That's right. So in February, we have a really popular, we actually had him at the school years ago, and I continually heard from parents about him. So I thought we maybe need to bring him back. And he's really a performance artist. He's also a psychologist, and he incorporates performance art into thought-provoking pieces about race, about bullying, about, again, relationships. And so it's really an all-encompassing night where you get a lot out of it. Kids also really enjoy it, so we've often brought him in to work with students. But this one will be for the adults. So it's titled, You Don't Know Me Until You Know Me. And again, a lot of, you know, things that happen with bullying are about kids who don't get to know the person first. So a lot, it's deeper than that, but it also kind of, again, covers race and all sorts of really tricky issues.
And what's his name?
His name is Mikey Fallon.
All right, and that's on February 21st, 7 p.m. That's my birthday. Bless you.
Well, happy birthday.
That also means I don't have an excuse not to attend.
That's true. I'll even treat you to a cake afterwards.
I'm committed to it now. And then after March and March is done, then in April you have another one coming along.
So the final one is actually a documentary called Angst. And, you know, again, we know that more kids have anxiety than ever, and we're seeing all these other manifestations of anxiety in kids. And so this is just a documentary about how it's playing out in kids' lives and maybe things that you can do about it. We showed a documentary last year on technology, and people really liked it. So we thought we'd try the documentary again, and we previewed it. And it's pretty fascinating, a little, you know, not, I don't want to quite say scary, but it's a little alarming. You don't realize how many kids are suffering and how many kids are trying to navigate just how hard it is to be a kid, and then on top of it, all the things that are happening inside. So,
and what's the name of that person?
That's just a documentary. So it's called Angst, Breaking the Stigma Around Anxiety.
Is it, do you think it's that children nowadays actually do have more anxiety than we did as children, or is it just more out there? Are we just
it's
more
probably
aware
both.
Of it?
It's probably both. I think certainly mental health in general gets more, in a good way, more publicity than it did. It was certainly hidden or, you know, implied that it was something to be ashamed of. So I think we're certainly more aware of it. But I think we live in a more anxious time. And so what you see is, you know, anxious parents then oftentimes have kids who might feel anxious because it spreads. And so there's a lot of, you know, reasons, whether it's the greater world or even your own family, that that anxiety could spread and kind of grow in a sense. So I think there's a little both. I think it's more diagnosed, and I think there's more of it.
I think we suffer nowadays from TMI.
Yeah.
That is, we just know too much about too many things that we really didn't need to know about.
Yeah.
That may sound counterintuitive for an
educator. I think ignorance is bliss still has some true truth to it.
All right. I want to ask Dr. Shannon Schuster right now about the Imaginate Center. That's something that you have at Swain School.
We do. It's pretty new. I think we're in our third year of the Imaginate Center. And the other kind of word for it in education is makerspace. So ours is called the Imaginate Center, but it's really a makerspace. And what a makerspace does is it puts a bunch of materials and equipment and tools in a space that would be hard to have in every classroom. So for example, whether it's a 3D printer or whether it's a million cotton balls, when you have a resource, it's almost like a library. It's a place you can go to get access to materials, to equipment, to tools, and also sometimes to technology. And it allows our students to make things that they maybe couldn't just make in the classroom. So for example, last year, our first graders were studying some physics in their science class. And they decided to have make their own sleds, and that was the project.
Which grade are you?
First grade.
First graders were studying physics?
Well, and the physics of sleds, especially. So they had to learn about friction, right, and why sleds work and what would make a better sled, and they had to prototype it. So some used cardboard and some used plastic and some used things that didn't work and fell apart. And they spent time in there using all that equipment. And again, not that some of that couldn't have been done in the classroom, but it's nice to have all those resources in one place. And then we actually had a parent who brought us a snowmaker, because of course last winter was the winter that we didn't have any snow until very late. So we had built these awesome sleds and had nothing to try them out on. So we had a parent come with a snowmaker, and we overnight put a couple feet of snow in the back of the school, and all the kids went outside and tried out their sleds. And then they had to do some analysis and reflection. You know, what do I think worked well in my sled? How could I have made my sled better? And that's an important piece of it too, is just thinking about the process of learning and the process of making something. So it's everything from making sleds to, in the older grades, using really more woodworking materials, whether it's electric things that you wouldn't let a first grader maybe engage in, to robotics and some electronics. And again, we do have some 3D printers and things that they can make and design on the computer, and then the 3D printer prints them out. So we want them to have exposure to that, but it has to be linked to the curriculum, right? So the idea is that, what are you making? What is it for? So we have an engineering and design class where they're really asked to solve real-life problems, especially around the school. So if we're having a drainage problem in one corner of the building, how can we solve that, right? And we'll take the kids outside and they'll look at that and then they'll have to prototype it and they can present it and maybe they'll have to convince their peers which is the best prototype of all the ones we made. Wow. But it's really this idea of solving real problems, not just made up problems in a book.
Those are problems that the children actually see. And that you tell them, we're having a problem
right
over here with the drainage.
Right. Well, when
let's
you talk about engagement, nothing's more engaging than a real problem,
really,
right?
Really.
And then they're really proud. I mean, nothing makes a kid feel better than thinking, I did that, or that came from my idea, or that was my class that built that. And we want them to have that ownership.
And these are all manual arts, you could call it, or manual activities.
There are. There's a piece of it that's a little throwback to the shop. Time and education. So it's like all the shops in one room, in a sense.
Right. Yes, in the old days, remember, shops were for boys.
Right.
And home ec was for girls. Oh, yes, way back in the old days. But that has all changed now. This is called the Imaginate Center. Do all children go there at some point? Are there scheduled times that they must go there, or do they choose to go there?
Yes and no. So when In the older classes, they actually have engineering and design class, so they'd go there for a scheduled class. In the younger grades, it is just part of what they're learning in school. So in first grade, when they were making the sleds, you know, they would leave their classroom and go down, but it might be that they go every day for a week, and then maybe they don't go at all for 2 months. So it's integrated fully into what they're learning in the classroom, and it really varies on the class they're in and when it's appropriate.
Interesting. Dr. Schuster has also initiated other innovations at Swain School. So, Shannon, tell us a little bit about a couple of those.
Well, I've only been there a short time, so I don't want to overstate. Some of these things were already in motion, and really it's a team. We have an incredible faculty and a really great administration team, so I can't take all the credit. But we've put in some curricular things that I think make a big difference. So this year, all of our teachers were trained in a philosophy called Responsive Classroom, which is a nationally recognized program. And what it does is it really consciously teaches culture. So every child at the Swain School starts every single day with 30 minutes of a circle. So even the 14-year-olds start every day in a circle where they have to communicate with their peers. So they have to look them in the eye. And it might be as simple as a greeting, especially with our youngers. That's, good morning. They might have to shake hands, or they might say, good morning. And then what did you have for breakfast?
Now, always the very first thing.
Yes. So that's how we start our day. But over time, it builds community that not only reduces things like bullying and relational aggression, but also builds a safety in conversation. So with all the things happening this past weekend with the NFL and, kind of the racial tension that's playing out there, our 7th and 8th grade one group, and the groups are small. Again, they're kind of 10 to 12 kids in these circles. But the teacher posed the question, would you have kneeled this weekend if you had been on the field? And so that can happen because every day starts with that circle. So when you have created a safe space to say, this is my opinion, and I'm not worried about being judged, or I'm not worried about repercussions, then you really can get to deeper conversations. And then that's when the learning happens, because someone says, gosh, I never thought of it that way. Or, well, I'm, as a white person, this is how I feel. Or as a person of color, this is how I feel. So that has a really big impact on culture. And we already had a really great culture. But when we looked at what Responsive Classroom does, we said, well, this already aligns with what we believe in. So let's really make it formalized. So it starts with that. And then it also kind of weaves into just the everyday life of the school. So, when you think of especially our younger students, even though they're in one classroom with their homeroom teacher, they still have to go to library or they have to go to the art room. And so what this program does is it allows all of us to use the same language and to have the same expectations. Because for some students, they can't handle that variance in this room, you can't talk. And in this room, you can. And in this room, you can stand up. And in this room, you can't. And that's confusing, right,
yes,
for those children.
Yes.
So what this does, it allows us to have common language and common expectations, and then kids learn better, their anxiety goes down, because they know what to expect, right? And there's a commonality and there's safety in that. So that's something we've implemented this year, and we're only, 4 weeks into the school year, but you can already tell the impact when you walk around. So that's one thing. We put in a new math program last year called Singapore Math, which is a worldwide math philosophy that, no surprise, came out of Singapore. And it really stresses the idea of understanding the math, not just getting the answer. And I'm a math teacher. And
I have to stop you here. Are you one of those teachers who said you must show your work?
I used to. I don't do that anymore. I know. I'm
shocked.
I know. The more progressive I get, in part because we don't all learn the same way. And for kids who can do it in their head, when you say you have to show it, some of them say, I don't even know what to write down, right? I figured it out in my head. But what Singapore does is it makes it concrete before it makes it abstract. And so especially as you get into higher math, you can teach someone the algorithm. And I always joke that I could teach a monkey algebra if I had enough time. Because if you teach the algorithm, you can get the right answer. But it's not really about the answer. I mean, a computer can solve almost any math problem we can think of.
A million times faster than we
Absolutely,
can.
And more accurately. Yeah. So what we really need is to understand how math works and how you apply math. And so what Singapore does is it allows kids to understand it on a deeper level so that eventually they'll get to that algorithm and they'll do it the same way we probably did it, but they'll understand it in a much different way. So that's another program we've implemented. You know, there's a lot going on. We just wrote a strategic plan with the board. For the school. So we're looking at things like making sure our writing program is where we want it to be, because writing is such an important piece. And something that I think we do well as a small school, we can have kids write a lot, but we want to make sure that it's everything we hope it is. And then the last one that I think is the most exciting is our public speaking, which we really emphasize at Swain. We really want kids to feel comfortable speaking in front of their peers or speaking in front of strangers or speaking in front of large groups.
Very important.
So we're looking to formalize that. And again, make sure that that's a hallmark of a Swain education.
I've heard that nowadays children in first, second, third grades are not being taught to write cursive anymore. is that passé?
You didn't say this was going to be controversial when I came. Well, there's two different avenues I would say to take on that. One is that I look at the school day as never long enough. Right? There's always more we could be doing. And I'm not sure that I personally feel that I want to spend 30 minutes a day teaching cursive in a world where any formal writing would be typed, right? And the difference used to be that when you formally write, you write in cursive, and that print was for casual writing. And it takes younger students a long time, to learn cursive, right? So I think we want to look at the cost value proposition. The one exception is there are students, especially those with fine motor issues, who actually learn better with cursive than they do with print. And so, again, it's individualized, right? What does each student need and what works for them? So I don't want to take a stance, except as with everything, there's never enough time. So,
interesting. I heard recently that children spend about 5% of their time in school, meaning that outside of school is so crucial. And you talked before about the teachers and parents being together and trying to be on the same wavelength. Dr. Shannon Schuster, our time is up here on Lehigh Valley Discourse. That's what happens when you have fun with an interview. It goes quickly. Thank you so much for coming back and sharing some of your exciting tales of Swain School.
Thank you for having me.
Let me just mention again that there's this Parenting Education Series, which begins Wednesday, October 18th, 7 p.m. at Swain School. And there's another one in February and another one in April. So it's about parenting, trying to be better parents. Dear listeners, thank you for tuning in this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse here at WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Thanks to Neil Heaver, our Director of Operations, who's done our engineering this evening. And until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.